You know, folks, we have been kind of journeying through, it's been a year now, through the Gospel of Luke, looking at the life of Jesus. We're only up to chapter 9, so that kind of tells you how long we're going to be in Luke. It's already taken a year to get to chapter 9. And we've been really doing several things. Number one, broadening our concept of who Jesus is, because a lot of times, I'll just be honest with you, what we know about Jesus, we assume we know a lot about him, but the reality is we don't know much about him. We know a lot about what church should be like, but as far as Jesus, we really don't really understand that. And the other thing is, we want to broaden our understanding of the gospel, because you could read through this, like we're going to look at just a few verses today, and we could just read through it and say, oh, that's really nice, what does that mean? And just kind of go on and really not allow it to affect our lives. And this is a passage today where Jesus is dealing again with his disciples. And let's just stop for a moment. A lot of folks think that, oh man, this is just a bunch of phony baloney, mumbo jumbo. You know, this can't be true. Well, you know what? When you look at what Jesus is dealing with here in his disciples, why would they write that about themselves? Because today it's not a very flattering picture. Because here's Jesus, he's told them who he is, he's told them what's going to happen, and their focus is on self. Their focus is on what they can get. And isn't that true of our culture today? You know, I got some breath mints for the conference, and I was looking at this container, and it's like, I thought, man, the sticker's on backwards. Because it had to share and not to share. And I thought, this has got to be on backwards. Because the share part opened up a teeny-weeny flap where you could get one little mint. So I could share with you and give you one little mint. But the not-to-share part opened up half of the container, and you could get as much as you wanted to, because that's for you. And I thought, no, this ain't a mistake. This is the way they made it, because that's our culture, isn't it? If I'm going to share with you, I'm just going to give you a little bit, but I'm keeping the rest for myself. And that's our culture. And really, that's the attitude of what? Pride. Selfishness. And that's really what we're going to see here in this passage. And one of the manifestations of pride, one of the manifestations of selfishness is having feelings of superiority. And we all struggle with that, because the reality is that whether you realize it or not, no matter where your circumstances is, no matter what the situation is, there is somebody that you look down on. I mean, it's funny, because I was talking to somebody one time, and I tell you, they were in the ditch of life. They were in the ditch of life. I mean, things could not get any worse in their life. But as far as they were concerned, hey, they were doing okay, because they were not like this other guy who was even further down in the ditch. So even with this guy who was in the ditch of life, he had feelings of what? Yeah, being superior. And so what we're going to see here is that here's these disciples, and now where their feelings of superiority come from, their feelings of superiority come from the reality that they've been with Jesus, and Jesus is doing all this stuff, and he's part of their guys. You know what I'm saying? He's part of the crew that shows up with him. And so because they're with him, they think they're great. And so they've got these feelings of superiority. And we're going to see that manifested here in this passage. So I want you to notice with me. Look with me at verse 46 all the way through verse 50. Here's what it says. Then a dispute arose among them as to which of them would be the greatest. And Jesus, perceiving the thought of their heart, took a little child and set him by him, and said to them, whoever receives this little child in my name receives me. And whoever receives me receives him who sent me. For he who is least among you will be great. Now John answered and said, Master, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we forbade him because he does not follow with us. But Jesus said to him, do not forbid him. For he who is not against us is on our side. We're going to see a couple of things here, folks. We're going to see, as we look at these issues, the issue of this feelings of superiority, we're going to see, first of all, one first section there, delusions of grandeur. These guys are suffering with this issue of who's the greatest, and then we're going to see that the issue of being an exclusive club and how Jesus addresses both of those. First of all, the first issue in verse 46 to 48, here they are. Let me just remind you where they're at. Three of them went up with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. They've seen Jesus in all of His glory. Seen Him with Moses and Aaron, and you know, Peter, he speaks. He doesn't think about what he's saying. He's got to say something, even though what he's saying is silly. He says, well, come on, Jesus, I'll build you three tents, you know. They hear the voice of God. And then they're scared to death, and then all of a sudden Jesus is back to normal. They go down the mountain. There's a big crowd there. The other disciples are there. And there's a father there who's got this demon-possessed boy who's having epileptic seizures. And the reality is the disciples can't do anything for him. And so Jesus, in his frustration with his disciples, rebukes them and heals the boy. And everybody's excited. And Jesus is really frustrated with his disciples. And remember, he kind of says to them, guys, get it through your head. I'm going to die. I'm going to be betrayed and died. But they're not getting it. They don't see it. They're not hearing Jesus. Have you ever been with somebody like that? They're so caught up in a moment, and you're trying to be the serious one and say, well, you know, hey, you know, I understand you're excited right now, but there's another part of this you need to be aware of. And they just don't get it. They just don't see it. And you just want to go, to slap them. Do you understand what I'm saying? They just don't get it. And they're not getting it here, because what's going on is that all of a sudden, here they are, they're arguing among themselves. Think about this conversation, who the greatest is. Now, here's what I want you to see. There's a couple of things that come out of this passage. Here's what I want you to see. Number one, they were too busy posing. They were too busy posing. Here's what's going on here. So, I mean, first of all, the passage tells us that what they saw on the mountain, they didn't tell anybody. They probably didn't tell anybody what they saw on the mountain. But here's what they probably did. Hey, Jesus took us, not you. Can you see that? I can see Peter doing that. We're special because He took us. Oh, look, guys, you were here, and you couldn't even heal that guy, but if we were here, we could have done it. They're posing. I mean, because you've got to understand what's going on in their mind. They understand Jesus is getting ready, because we're at that turning point now in His ministry. Jesus is getting ready to go to Jerusalem. They think He's coming in, He's going to overthrow the Romans, and it's gravy train from here on out. And they're His right-hand man. And it's now a question of who the greatest is. Who's going to be in the more special position? It's not a human thing to do. They're posing. They're too busy posing here. They're trying to position themselves in such a way that they look good. And so they're fighting, duking it out, arguing among themselves. Now, understand something. They didn't do it in front of Jesus. You ever notice that? They didn't do it in front of Jesus because they're posing. They're wanting to get that special position. Here's the other thing. So they were jockeying for position. One of the other Gospels tells us, I mean, this is how serious it was among them. One of the other Gospels says that John and James had their mother. Have you ever seen this thing happen before? One of the other Gospels tells us that John and James had their mother come to Jesus. And Jesus said, what can I do for you? And here's what she said. Grant them that they will sit on your left and right hand. Now you might be saying, well, what does that mean? What they're saying is this. Grant them that they might what? Have the two key positions in your kingdom. So these folks, they're jockeying for a position here. You ever met somebody like that in your organization that you work in? There are terms for people who do that. I can't say them from the pulpit. But you know what they are. This is what these guys are doing. And they're arguing among themselves. Now, here's the reality. When you look at verse 47, look at the first part of verse 47. This is amazing. This is something you've got to realize, too. Look at what it says. And Jesus, perceiving the thought of their heart. Here's the next part. Jesus knows their hearts. He may not have been there physically, right there in the midst of their conversation and argument. But Jesus knows exactly what's going on. He knows their hearts, and He knows what the issue is. And the issue is, let's be reminded ourselves, when we're talking about posing, when we're talking about jockeying for position, when we're talking about arguing it out with others, who is the greatest, the issue is just flat-out pride and selfishness. The issue is flat-out pride and selfishness. And let's be honest, the issues that they're struggling with are just a part of our culture, are they not? If you go to work for a company, who likes to be on the bottom rung of the ladder? Everybody wants to what? Get a better position. And it can be sometimes what? A dog-eat-dog-eat world, isn't it? And you might start out in an organization and you're best buddies with somebody, and then later on, he does you in so that he can get a better promotion and a bigger paycheck. How many of you have seen that happen? You see what I'm saying? That's just part of our culture. That's what these guys are engaged in. And here's the reality. It may look good on the outside. You may look good, and you may have others deceived. Oh, he's a good guy, and he's, you know, he deserves that position, and he's there for us. But the reality is that Jesus knows hearts. He perceived their hearts. He understood exactly what they were doing. He understood exactly what was going on. And he was not happy about it. And here's what he did. Notice the next point. Jesus points out who will be great. You know, as I studied this passage, I had a couple of things corrected in my mind. I had wrongly assumed for years that what Jesus is saying here, that in order for you to be great in the kingdom of God, you've got to be the least right now. In order for you to be the greatest later, you've got to be nothing now. How many of you have heard that kind of concept? Okay? If you look exactly at what he's saying, because I'm saying that when you brush over it, you're going to miss it. But if you look exactly at what he's saying here, he's got a message here that will blow it all away and put everything in perspective and help us to live the way we need to live right now. Here's what he did. Notice what he says, verse 48. Verse 47, it says, he took a little child and set him by him. So first of all, he does something that's just, in their culture, plain weird. What do you mean it's weird? He took a little child, George, and put the child. What's weird about that? Well, let me help you understand their culture. In their culture of that time, a child was considered insignificant, so really didn't matter, and was supposed to be absent from the presence of adults, especially adult males. They could be with women, because that's where they're supposed to be with, but in the presence of men and in with adults in general, they were insignificant, the lowest on the totem pole, and nobody paid them any mind. So here's what Jesus does. He takes something that is insignificant, nobody even thinks about, nobody even considers, nobody has any feelings for, a child, and sets him by him. And here's what he says. Look at what he says. Whoever receives this little child, whoever receives this little insignificant one, Jesus is saying, in my name, receives me. He's saying to these guys, you are jockeying for position. You think it's special to be up on a mountain with me. You think it's special to be doing all this stuff in my name. You think it's special to be with me when all the healings are taking place. You think it's special to be in the position that you're in. He's saying, look, whoever takes one of these insignificant ones who reaches out and does something for someone who's on the lowest ember of society, who reaches the down and out, because that's where a child was considered. That one, I'll receive them. And when I receive them, God receives them. God the Father does. He's saying to them, guys, you want to know what greatness is? Greatness is not your jockeying. Greatness is you reaching out to people who don't deserve to be reached out to. But he goes one step further. He said, you want to understand? Look at what he says, that last part. For he who is least among you, notice what it said, will be what? What's the word there, folks? Great. Now notice what the word isn't. Greatest. See, when we talk about, did you have to be low to be the greatest? We've added something to what that word is. We've added the EST to it. That's not there. What's he saying there? He's saying that in the kingdom of heaven, everyone will be great. So why are you jockeying for position? Why are you posing? Why are you strutting your stuff? Why are you making such a big deal of your accomplishments, making such a big deal of your associations? Why are you cutting the throat of your neighbor to get to what you want to have? Because the reality is even this little bitty child who is insignificant in your eyes will be great in the kingdom of heaven. Do you see the implication of that? Here, folks, let's bring it back to where we are today in the church. Because here's the thing. Churches are like that. I've been a Christian now. Been a Christian now 20, just a few weeks here, it'll be 26 years. And the night before I went to the board meeting, since I was so close to my home area, I stopped by and saw my mom. And my mom now lives one block away from the little bitty Baptist church that, really, I got baptized there and ordained there. It's like a spiritual marker to me. It's not a Baptist church anymore, it's something else. I don't even know what it is, but the building's there. The building has more significance to me because there were key moments that happened in that church in my life. And just the reality of being there and realizing that He takes the insignificant and uses them. Uses them no matter where they're at. It's not what you do for Him. It's who you are, a child of God. And because you're a child of God, what? You're going to be great. You understand, we're so messed up. So the implication is, so I've been in church a long time, from all the way from then to here. And I've been in big churches, I've been in mega churches, I've been in wee churches. I've got friends who pastor big churches, I've got friends who pastor small churches. And I'll be honest with you, we're more like the disciples than what Jesus is saying. We're too busy posing, too busy jockeying position for position, and we ignore the insignificant. Jesus is trying to say to us, guys, you got it all wrong. You got it all wrong. You're trying to find greatness. Greatness is in the insignificant because everybody will be great in the kingdom. You know, the message here for some of you here today is this. You might be here and you say, oh yeah, I can see that for you, George. Man, you're doing stuff. You just were in China. Yeah. But me? You don't know what I've done. You don't know how I've messed up. You don't know what's going on in my life right now. I don't feel great. I feel low. You know what? If you go by way the old way of church doing church is, yeah, you're right. But can I tell you something? The old way of doing church isn't Bible. And what the Bible says is that He takes a little insignificant child that is looked down upon in their culture, sets him in the midst, and says what? the least will be great. You're going to be great. You're going to be great. You know, in heaven, it isn't going to be how big your mansion versus how big mine is. I think they're all going to be spec homes. You know what I mean by that? They're all going to look alike. They're all going to be great. Because all of us are great in the kingdom of heaven. Do you understand? We take so much of our cultural thinking and smash it into the Bible where it doesn't belong. Jesus is telling them, quit posing, quit jockeying. You minister to someone like this. Because someone like this will be great in the kingdom of heaven. Here's what else he talks about. So immediately, John is the Apostle John who's there, and he's probably about 15, 16, or 17 about this time. He kind of sees where Jesus is going at with this thing, so he launches into a question, verse 49. Look with me at verse 49. Now John answered and said, Master, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we forbade him because he did not follow us. So John's immediately maybe convicted about something, convicted about what Jesus is saying. He should be convicted. And here's what he says. He says, you know, Jesus, there was something that happened. We didn't tell you about Jesus. There was this guy, and, you know, he was ministering in your name. He was casting out demons in your name. And you know what? We told him to stop because he wasn't part of us. And we're the only ones who can use your name, Jesus. So we told him to stop it. Is that right? What do you think, Jesus? You see what John's doing here? Here's what's going on here. These guys, not only did they have these feelings of grandeur that they were dealing with, these feelings of superiority, these delusions of grandeur, they thought they were an exclusive club. And the first thing I want you to see is that they assumed that they alone could serve God. They thought they were it. They thought that they were the only ones who could serve God. I mean, think about it. I mean, they thought, I mean, here's a guy, he's casting out a demon in Jesus' name. He is helping someone. So obviously somebody is being tormented by a demon. And here comes somebody in the name of Jesus and casts out the demon, and they're telling him, you better stop that. We're the only ones who can help people. See, they thought they were an exclusive club because, hey, we're hanging out with Jesus. The other thing I want you to see here is this. They saw themselves, again, as an exclusive group. They saw themselves as an exclusive group. It's just them, the 12. But the reality is, and here's what you see in the passage, if you understand what's going on here, the reality is their actions were based on pride and jealousy. Pride and jealousy. What's going on here? Remember what just happened? Remember, at the beginning of chapter 9, they're given the commission and told to go out, and that he has given them authority and power for them to go out in his name and to heal and to cast out demons. Remember, that's the beginning of chapter 9. We get down to the passage right before this, and they're faced with a situation where they're not able to cast out a demon. So they're not doing too good at this. So a couple of things are going on. Number one, first of all, they're prideful because they've received the commission to go and do this. Now they're seeing this other guy doing it. It's like, oh, wait a minute now. You didn't have Jesus tell you to do that. We've been told to do that. But also there's some jealousy going on because when they tried it, did it work, folks? No! Here's this guy. He does it. And it what? It works! Jealousy. See, what's going on here is this. They are so filled with pride that they're part of this exclusive group. They're jealous of anybody else. And so Jesus addresses it. Jesus addresses it. Look at what he says there in verse 50, and then I'm going to tell you what the application is for us here as a church. Verse 50, he says this. And Jesus said to him, that is John, do not forbid him. For he who is not against us is on our side. Here's what Jesus is saying. We must tolerate those whose service is different. We must tolerate those whose service is different. Jesus is saying, look guys, he may not be part of our group, but he's still working for the kingdom of heaven. You got to tolerate him. He's doing it in my name. So you tolerate him. You know what the application of that is for us? Folks, you know what? God's doing some amazing things in our church. Now here's, you know what? It's amazing because the enemy will attack us in two ways. When things weren't going well here, here's the attack.
You guys ain't doing nothing. You're worthless. Might as well just shut the doors on the place.
I mean, you know what I'm talking about. That's discouragement, isn't it? And he comes along and he discourages us in that area. Now that things are going well, he's got to change his attack. That doesn't work anymore. If he comes and attacks us now and says, you guys are worthless, you might as well close the door on the place, you're going to say, what is that? Give me a break. Look at what's happening. He's got to switch his tactic now. Do you want to know how he switches his tactic? Here's the tactic now. You guys are better than everybody else in town. You're reaching real people. Not just fake spiritual people. You guys are reaching real people. And so he attacks us at the issue of our pride. And do you realize we can, whether we realize it or not, and maybe we already have, and I've had to examine my heart even this week with this passage, Lord, do I think we're an exclusive club here? Do I think we're the only ones who got it together? Because we're reaching younger people, average people. Pride. Feelings of superiority. And what Jesus would say to us is, you know what, guys, I'm doing wonderful things through your church and you're reaching people where they're at and helping them in their needs. But you know what? I'm also in the other 9 churches in town. And they're reaching different kinds of people than you are. And they may not do it the way you do it, and they maybe use an organ and a piano, and you've got the drums and the guitar. And he's maybe wearing a suit and you're not, and maybe their crowd's older, and but whoever is for us is not against us. So you tolerate them. Do you see what's going on here? See, these guys are so wrapped up in themselves. They're posing, they're jockeying. They're arguing about who the greatest is. They think they're an exclusive group. And Jesus says, man, you guys are so messed up. You don't realize everyone will be great. And if anyone's serving in my name, even if you don't agree with what they're doing, you tolerate them. There is no place for pride in my church. That's what Jesus is saying. Look, here's the reality. Look, here's some things to think about. Number one, who is at the center of your world? Who's at the center of your world? You know what? The center of the disciples' world was who? The disciples. Look, when you're arguing about who the greatest is, and you know what the argument is, it's not, well, you're the greatest. Come on, believe me, you're the greatest. They're not arguing that way. They're thinking, I'm the greatest, baby. I was up on that mountain with him. When you talk about somebody who is thinking that way, well, we told him to stop Jesus because he wasn't part of us. The center of that world is self. It's not Jesus. Who's at the center of your world? Let's just bring it a little bit more personal here. Who's at the center of your marriage? Ouch. Is it all about you? I'm stepping on my own toes here, okay? Because we have that saying in my house. It's all about you, George. Yeah, and a lot of times it is, and that ain't good. Think about it. In this church, is it all about us or is it all about Jesus? In your life, is it all about you or is it all about Jesus? In your marriage, is it all about you in your marriage? Do your kids exist for you? Who's at the center of your world? Which brings up the next logical question that goes right along with that. Why are you doing what you do? Why are you doing what you do? That's a big question for me. One of the things I have to constantly pray as a pastor, because, you know, when you're a pastor, it's real easy for everything to be about you, the pastor. And one of the things that I have to pray whenever we do something here at the church or whenever God leads in something, I have to say to Him, God, purify my motives. Purify my motives. Lord, it is not about me. It's about You. It is not about me. It's about You. Purify my motives. Lord, if this is about me, then You kill it. You don't let it happen. You make me fall on my face. You make me a failure. What's it about? Why are you doing what you're doing? I mean, it doesn't take long to figure out that kind of thing. Like all of a sudden you decide to do something sweet for your sweetie. Why are you doing that? She's going to ask. After a few years of marriage, they ask that, don't they? Well, all of a sudden, you never thought about that before. Why are you doing that? Oh, I'm not doing that for any reason. Oh, yeah, you are. Why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you doing what you're doing? And then the reality is, the application of this is serve Jesus with a pure heart. Serve Him with a pure heart, not for what you can get out of it. Serve Him because of Him, because you love Him, because of what He did for you, not because of what you hope to get back. Isn't that what we do? The greatest example of that to me is Christmas. We go buy each other presents. Now, we buy each other presents, you know, and you ever notice we go to Walmart and we try to figure out, what am I going to get for them? What am I going to get for them? That's cheap. What am I going to get for them? And we get them something because we're like, what are they going to get for us? What are you going to get me? What'd you get me? Here's yours. Hope you like it. What did you get me? You know what I'm saying? We give gifts with a string attached. But you know what? That's what our service is like. You know what, folks? Serve Him from a pure heart. Why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you doing what you're doing at the church so others see what you're like? Why do you help out? We just had a great funeral dinner here. Why'd you make that casserole so everybody will think, boy, she's got the best casserole in church? I mean, it can be that insignificant. But that's for you, not for Jesus. Serve Him with a pure heart. Let's pray.